Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Sarah.
And this is Kate.
Today's podcast, What Number Twos Do and Why, Part 2 of 2.
The questions this cast answers are, what should I have my number two doing? How can I develop my successor? How can I make time for my responsibilities?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Hey folks, if you're seeking a discount for your group of individuals, the best option is to have Manager Tools come directly to you and deliver our training. You can typically save about 50% because our organizational training is session-based, and we'll work with up to 30 people for a full day where all of our expenses are included. It's economical, and you can get a large group working in concert to become effective managers, communicators, or hiring managers together. Contact Maggie to learn more detail about our content, licensing benefits, and pricing by emailing customerservice@manager-tools.com. That takes us to our number twos can handle for us reporting.
Yes.
Folks, effective managers don't create reports or create the reports we owe the organization. Yes, of course, we are responsible for them, but that responsibility is not for the creation so much as for the transmission of the information. You're not obligated to create reports. You're obligated to see that the communication has been made, that the reporting itself has been done. And in this way, our number twos and perhaps others can learn to create reports that are being reviewed by people elsewhere in the organization. Creation of reports, folks, it incorporates some political skills, which you can teach them. We're not suggesting you shade or massage your reporting into something that reflects more positively on you and your team. We would never suggest you do that. What we're suggesting is that your number two of all of your directs ought to know which reports and which numbers will elicit questions, and the report shouldn't be sent out until she has all of the answers to the questions that are bound to come up when people see that information.
Yeah. This one, I think, gets a lot of managers because so much of this reporting it's in spreadsheets, it's in programs that we enjoy using.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you my most relaxing work afternoon is a Friday afternoon when a lot of people are out and there's silence and I have a spreadsheet and yep. I get to make a graph or a chart. Ooh, man. I wish my personal life had more opportunities for creating charts and graphs because I used to use mint.com, but I don't use it anymore because it's defunct. I personally use a spreadsheet to manage my finances in my home because I love them. I love spreadsheets. I find it relaxing. And unfortunately, my personal life has very little reporting in it.
I mean, you can make reports. I don't know who's going to read them.
Yeah, unfortunately, the other person in my life reports to me.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah.
That's the problem is there's no
You're the number one in this case.
To send the reports that I would make to. They'd be so pretty, and I don't have anyone to show them to. So there's no one to ask the questions. Why is this part of the pie chart
right, so big? Exactly. No one reviews them.
Yeah. And I think this happens to people too, though. Especially if you were in a technical role before, it might be a part of your job that you really liked creating the charts and the graphs and the reporting, and it's concrete. Mm-hmm. You know, being in there, messing with the numbers, making the charts, all that stuff, it's concrete. It feels good. You can see it add up. It's not like management where things are iffy and you have questions. I genuinely believe that a lot of people, when they're moving into the managerial role, struggle to break the serotonin cycle from their previous tasking. And definitely reporting is one of those things. It's very much, I have done this before. I know how to do it. You get that serotonin bump from that. The familiarity of it is relaxing. It's just so much easier to do this reporting because you've been doing it for weeks and weeks and weeks, for years maybe. It's relaxing. It's comforting. It feels good. It adds up. All the numbers are there. You can make it look beautiful. The thing is, you get paid too much money to do this now.
You do.
You do. And I would suggest, and you may have had this experience, it's better if somebody else makes it and you look at it, especially because then those questions that are going to come up, you have them.
Yeah.
When you see the chart for the first time and you didn't make it, you have four or five questions. Mm-hmm.
Immediately. Yeah.
Yes. And it helps us to honestly make sure that the questions that people have that see it next are valid ones, right? Because it might be the reason you have questions is because the chart is the wrong type, something like that. I find having somebody look over your charts, your reports, all that really can get some of those first level questions answered.
Yeah.
And if those are answered, it's more likely that the report is useful to the people who are actually going to use it and need to be good stewards of that information. Mm-hmm. So having your number two put it together allows you to ask the questions. And when you're asking those questions, they also learn. And so they get better. The stuff that comes to you, it's a level up from what the person who's first seen the data might put together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bet your number two, your whole team, your number two as well, they're not aware of all of the reporting that has to go together that you have to do.
Yeah. I'm certain that that's true.
Yeah. And they should learn now, honestly. And the way we do that is see one, do one, teach one. Let's teach them how to do it and delegate.
Yeah.
Again, delegate.
Exactly. Delegate.
So in addition to reports, they also run major projects.
Exactly. Major projects often delay ineffective managers. There's a visibility to more senior people, and so the routine of regular performance drops as attention is paid to political risk. But your number two needs exposure to these kinds of issues. And again, they will have to learn about how project tasks, status, and reporting are consumed by others in the organization. Major projects at all, are just a great source of many different opportunities to learn many different things, and therefore a perfect opportunity to help your number two sharpen their skills in a wealth of different areas. Now, before your heads explode, know that you don't have to delegate the entirety of this major project to them. That's not what we're saying. You can give them guidance and have them create a draft plan of action. The fact that your number two can create drafts is, there's a raft of opportunities for that, but major project draft plan, absolutely. You can review the plan and provide their insights, ones that only you would have. This kind of is like reporting, right? They create a draft plan. You'll see it. The moment you see it, you're going to have a bunch of questions. So you asking the questions will make that plan better. You can take responsibility for delivering on your deliverables as you normally would. But, and here's the part of it that I really like for number twos, creating the tracking document, a number two can do that. Checking in with deliverable owners before and after deadlines, number twos can certainly do that. Preparing what's going to be the inevitable PowerPoint that they're asked for, with metrics that ought to be obvious to anyone who's even related to this project, your number two can do that. Asking status questions in your internal project meetings, your number two can do that. There's a lot of parts of a project that can be delegated to a number two because a lot of the parts of the project are, kind of going back to your earlier conversation, Kate, the creation of spreadsheets and charts and graphs. There's a lot of things that your number two can pull together on your behalf, and you can just answer questions, and you can make better, and you can improve upon, but they can do the first 80% to save you that time.
Also, and I think we've seen this over the past couple of years, just because people have been involved in a project before does not mean that they know how to manage one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the academic creep of project management is real, y'all. You take for granted the project management skills you have, even if you're not a formal PM. I think most managers, a lot of managers who have been doing it for a long time, take for granted the project management skills they have. They don't remember that asking those status questions in the meetings is part of being a project management guru person. You're not a guru, but it again, you forget the stuff that you know that they don't. And setting some expectations for them around what you would do if you were doing this on your own can help them to inherently have those skills. And frankly, having two people do that, even if you're going to be in some of those meetings or help, is going to be useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no reason there can't be two people asking those questions, because your questions will be slightly different from theirs. It's still your project, but they're still your number two.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So then the next piece is they create plans. Now, we've already alluded to this earlier, folks, but too many managers think that they and they alone are responsible for all planning. Many managers, in fact, actually tell us, planning is my job description. But you should know that is a misreading of a job description. Your job description describes not what you are required to do, but what you are responsible for seeing done.
Just because it's in the job description doesn't mean that you are the person who has to do it with your own two hands.
Exactly.
Also, I have a bone to pick with job descriptions. I've done it before. You guys have been subjected to this little tirade. The job description is, frankly, obsolete the second anyone who's reasonably competent gets into that role.
Yeah.
Because there were things that weren't in the job description. There were things that were languishing. There were things that the previous person shied away from or didn't do. And the second you start that job, if you're at all competent, what is being done in the job is different than what is written down. I would suggest there are people on this, listening to this, who haven't seen their job description in years.
Potentially ever.
That's a valid point. They may have never seen one.
Like, I mean, you might have gotten a copy of it when you were hired.
Or you saw it as in the open rec.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
In the open rec. Exactly. And then you never really got a copy because your boss just told you what the job was. So you did that. Yeah. What's in the job description is not
obsolete the second you walk in
exactly.
the door.
Exactly. We ought as managers to know better.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my gosh. Such a good point. Let's not harp on our own job description, because aren't you asking of your directs things that aren't in theirs?
Yeah.
Are you asking them to verbatim follow their job description?
No.
Okay. So we don't care if the word planning is in your job description.
Right.
We don't care if your number two is not a planner.
Right.
They can learn. You can teach them. It's not hard once you embrace the iterative approach, knowing that the original plan will be changed because it should only have been seen as a draft, and no plan survives first contact with the enemy, which is the actual work. Although that frustrates me because the actual work is the part I like. So I hate calling it the enemy. However, in this case, the analogy works. As the saying goes, the other saying, planning is everything, but plans are nothing.
Yeah.
We have to think it through.
Right.
And inevitably, we will veer off course.
Exactly. Exactly. The plan is just a place to start. So, folks, teach your number two to not self-censor. We've often seen people create a first draft in minutes, knowing full well it's only like 50% of the way there. But when other people see it, they immediately jump to pointing out all the errors and all the things that are missing. Too many planners think that any corrections or even suggestions or recommendations are a black mark on them. But it's far from it. Others are standing atop the shoulders of your first draft. They wouldn't be able to get to the place they are today were it not for that first work. And again, this is a perfect example for an opportunity to give number two something that they can start with. They can do your draft, your very first step, and get you 50% of the way there. I mean, I would love to save 50% of the time in everything I do all the time by having someone do that first draft. That's exactly what we're talking about here. They just do the first step, gets you half the way.
I very specifically know someone, an individual person. I can bring their face to my mind. If you bring them an idea or a plan, the first three things they say sound negative. It sounds like they're throwing rocks at it.
Yeah.
I share this with y'all so that you know it is 100% natural and normal that there's someone seeing the plan who says, nope, I have these questions. What about this? What about this? What about this? And you should expect it.
Yeah.
It's just human nature.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. And frankly, most people can only ask those questions after a plan has been presented to them. It's not a, this plan isn't good. It's, were these things considered? It's just totally, totally normal. It's not a black mark. It happens. I am so used to this person doing it now that I don't even notice it anymore. And I always just assume that silently in their head, they said, oh, that's a good idea. What do I think about that? And then they out loud said the stuff that sounded negative about it. And I just want to reassure y'all that it's useful to start with a plan, because most of the time with a blank sheet of paper, people can't ask any questions.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There has to be a plan to start with such that people can proceed to improve it. And just don't beat yourself up over the project plan. Don't tell your number two that it has to be perfect. Don't tell them that. Tell them, hey, this is what's going to happen. You're going to draft something. Then we're going to massage it. We're going to get better at it. Mm-hmm. You tell them just that they're making the start.
Yes.
Hey, you're in charge of the starting. And then when the project's completed, no matter how much the plan changed, honor your number two publicly for that first draft.
Yeah.
As you said earlier, the big step is from zero to one. And without something, people can't move forward, right? That's the hardest part. And then people start to get it, make it better.
Right.
Get their questions out, all that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And folks, if you've got a number two who's doing a first draft for you and you know you're going into a meeting and it's going to be, the impression will be that people are pointing out all the things in their first draft that were not done or were done incorrectly, let them know. This is how it works. We create a first draft and then we go to a meeting and people talk and people contribute. And that guy, the guy that Kate knows, that guy is going to say a bunch of things that are going to sound to you like pointing out what you've done wrong. And really what that person is doing is trying to help us make it better. So give them that. Tell them that's what to expect. This is how things work in an organization. You come up with something, you take it and present it, and everyone points out all its flaws. I mean, that's the story of my life. That's basically my everyday. So if this person's new to that, they might not understand that that's kind of how these things work. It's iterative. Make sure they know that so that they don't create your first draft for you and then feel picked on or feel as though they did it poorly when really what they did was just give it a start. That's why we want to give them recognition. That's why we want to let them know, because it's not going to be perfect.
And I really, truly believe that those people who are hearing the plan for the first time are starting to think through a thought process that gets them to that plan. And when they're doing that, they're wondering, did you think about these things?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of exciting things about the M Conference. Two of them are Mark and Mike, who will both be attending this year's M Conference, October 9th and 10th in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area. Come to the M Conference in October and meet Mark and Mike. Ask them the questions that you've always had about the podcast, their involvement, founding, whatever you've got. M Conference, October 9th and 10th. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
Okay, so that takes us to they present for you at meetings.
I find this to be a pretty easy sell most of the time. Because if we say to you, you don't have to give all the presentations that you are asked for, your number two can do some of the lesser ones, a lot of people rejoice.
Yeah, they do.
People don't want to speak in public.
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
The thing is, sometimes the worry I find with managers is, well, I don't like it. And I know how to do it. I know I'm competent. And their concern is that their direct isn't quite ready. My direct isn't ready to present. Okay, great. Have them prepare the presentation, the PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Work with them. People don't even like PowerPoint.
Exactly.
I do find, though, in a group of like one out of every 30, people do like PowerPoint.
Yeah. Some people really do. Mark does, I think.
What?
I'm pretty sure Mark does. Anytime I'm stuck on a PowerPoint thing, I just ask Mark and he knows the answer.
Yeah, I don't understand why PowerPoint thinks it's smarter than me. And recently, with this big AI boom that has happened in the last couple of years. Someone reinvigorated Clippy. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, Clippy. I know Clippy. Yeah.
Okay. So somebody brought Clippy back, but they backed him with AI. So he was actually useful.
Oh, wow.
I was so excited. I always thought he was adorable and that if he was adorable and useful, I would be all about it.
I would be all about it.
Oh, yeah. He was so funny. I loved him. Unfortunately, the person who did it doesn't work for Microsoft. And Microsoft was chapped. So Clippy's dead again, which is unfortunate because that's exactly what we wanted him to be, right? Was smart. So there's that. I find most people don't like PowerPoint. And if you work in an organization where there's a lot of like, I used to work at a place where each slide had to have a certain amount of branding, FOUO, the medallions, and they all have to be in this exact place. And you have to have a certain set of them on each project or program. Nightmare. I can tell you, having somebody else learn that if you have learned it is a great benefit. If for no other reason, then you could get the templates prior to you having to make the slides, the templates could be ready. Ask this of your number two, work with them on the drafts. Take the same approach we mentioned about planning. Tell them you don't need a PowerPoint yet. You need an outline.
Just an
start
outline.
There. Yeah. And it's so funny. It is true that 40 years ago when PowerPoint was first introduced, it took, you know, organizational world by storm. So much so, and maybe this is why Mark likes it so much, that Army officers stationed at the Pentagon spent so much time on PowerPoints, preparing briefings as constantly tasking at the Pentagon, that they became rudely referred to as PowerPoint Rangers, suggesting that working on an office application was a little too far from their job as warriors. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe familiarity has helped people to get more comfortable with PowerPoint. I just don't like it.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. A lot of people think that the beginning of a presentation is done in PowerPoint. But folks, PowerPoint doesn't have to be the start of a presentation. And frankly, to your point, Kate, when you open up PowerPoint, when you start playing with there, now you're spending a bunch of time on colors and logos and spacing and heading and subheadings and footers and fonts and graphics and nothing that is the actual presentation that needs to be done. As we've said before, presentations are about you, not your slides. You should be the center of focus. So be warned, don't let your number two dive headfirst into PowerPoint and spend hours and hours and hours ad nauseum playing with fonts and colors and bullets and all of the things that they could distract them from what is what is necessary in the presentation. Help them or encourage them to work on the logic, the structure, the key points. And by all means, have someone that's not you come up with a standard template so that all of your presentations going forward are just capturing the meat and logic of the briefing. Ensuring your presentations are persuasive, not worrying so much about the fact that they are pretty.
I love that. It's so helpful. I don't have to ask Clippy for help.
Yeah, exactly.
Once an unready to present number two has prepared some of your presentations, have them attend some of your actual briefings. Tell your number two that they are there to learn how people who are presented to, people who are outside and above your team, how they respond, how those people ask questions, how they fight back against issues they disagree with. We're teaching them how the PowerPoint, when exposed to others, creates reactions.
Mm-hmm.
This will also help them learn which issues you will not give ground on,
yeah,
which issues you might. Have them learn which people you will not give ground to and which people you will.
Yes, exactly.
And then at that point, now, delegate to your number two presenting for you. Have them create the deck and rehearse it with you. Yes, this takes time, but it's less time than if you had to create the presentation to begin with. Further, it's an investment in getting your future time back. Remember, managerial economics 101. Anything you and a direct can do, both of you can do, must be done by a direct.
Yes.
And that guidance usually means you're number two for a start.
Exactly. And then, of course, the last piece of our guidance, your number two is you when you are out. So when you're out or when you are unavailable, your number two speaks for you. Yes, there are some things that will have come to you that'll get whittled down as you embrace your responsibility for developing your directs, starting with your number two.
Yeah, some of those things will have to come to you.
Yes, exactly.
And okay, first they go through your number two.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, developing your number two is also going to make you better at developing everyone else on your team as well. So a lot of these skills both benefit the recipient as well as the person giving the responsibility.
Yeah, for sure. And also in your future time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? As we mentioned in the last bit. And guess what? This is also going to help you to recover from your real life. When you're sick,
yeah,
tell your number two to run things. Tell them to make decisions and keep track of what they do and what they decide, and have them brief you when you come back. Resist the urge to correct everything you would have done differently. Most decisions and actions don't require that. They don't have to do it exactly as you would do it. And this is actually in the podcast that we have about the responsibility ladder.
Okay, yeah.
We talk about have your directs make a recommendation to you. It doesn't have to be the same recommendation you would make.
Yeah.
It only needs to be a recommendation you can agree with. And that subtlety may be something that's lost on managers. To be fair, I would suggest it's lost on humans.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a human problem.
Mm-hmm. I know someone very, very well, someone who I trust very deeply, who is a great example for me of the all the water ends up in the ocean. This person does things exactly opposite to how I would do them. Like the so oppositely. And she gets everything done. She gets it all done. So resist that urge. Let's not correct them. All the water ends up in the ocean. You don't need to have made the same decision. You need to be able to agree with the one that they made. And look, y'all, sometimes it might come up that you would like to say to them,
"Yeah,
we should have done this differently." Don't correct everything. In some cases, you might need to make some corrections. If you can't trust them, though, to do this, it's probably more an indication of you needing to relax your micromanagement of them because you see them as doing your job. It's not your job to do it. It's your job to ensure it's done, which means it doesn't have to be done your way.
Right. Exactly. And folks, you can't always complain about the fact that you can never be uninterrupted on your vacation and you can never just have a sick day where you can just be at home and be sick and then not trust other people to do things while you're out. You can have one or the other. Now, we would encourage you to just trust people and you're going to come back and some things are going to be done not your way. And some things could have been done better and could have been done differently. And you can educate and you can help encourage so that next time different choices are made. But don't go back and redo everything that's been done on your behalf. Because it's not going to help either party, them or you. You want to take that time for yourself. Now, so what that means is when you're traveling, let your number two and your team know that your number two is in charge for most things. You don't have to immediately log into Wi-Fi on every single plane you've ever been on to make sure that every single email you've ever received is responded to.
Right.
And when you're with a customer and you can't be with a customer and run your team, let your number two know that they should make some decisions and take some of those actions on your behalf. Teach them to decide. And sure, there's going to be some positive and negative feedback that's going to come from that. Make sure they take care of what's urgent, but also what's important. If it's urgent, but not important, tell them to act. If it's important, but not urgent, tell them to let you know, and you can think about it and discuss when you return.
Mm-hmm. such a helpful series of lessons to learn too for number two, important, urgent, all that. Because I've discovered directs who don't understand what's urgent will constantly be asking for your ear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not valuable. And as you mentioned, when you're on vacation, be on vacation. Don't dial into every meeting. Don't dial into any meeting. Have your number two attend. Some bosses will expect a heads up from you that your number two is attending. Some won't. You should know which one your boss is. And when your number two shows up, somebody may ask, why are you here? Where's your boss? Teach them to say, she's on vacation. If pressed, which is clumsy on the part of the presser, teach them to say, she empowered me to speak for her. Others, in many cases, not even your boss, aren't authorized to tell you how to run your team.
Yeah, exactly. You can't, your peer who's questioning your direct doesn't have the ability to change the way you manage your team because they wanted you to go to their thing and you weren't there.
When people kind of push back on me about, hey, someone has to be in this meeting or I have to be in this meeting, when people say that, I say to them, what if you had a specialist doctor's appointment? Would you skip that meeting for a specialist doctor's? I usually use cardiologist.
Yeah, sure, because, something serious, grave.
Yeah, or just something that is hard to get into and there's not a lot of spots and it's really episodic for you, hopefully. I ask people, okay, like when people have, when we have this conversation at events and then people like push back on me, I say, okay, would you skip that meeting and send your number two if you had to be at the cardiologist? Because people tend to, I think, prioritize their vacation under like a doctor's appointment.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
I can see like, that. Totally.
Your vacation isn't as important as a doctor's appointment. So if you had this doctor's appointment, you would suggest that this meeting isn't crucial enough that you should skip your doctor's appointment. So, okay. I would suggest that a lot of people don't go on enough vacations that one or two vacations a year is going to hurt anything. And it's fine for your number two to be there.
Right.
And that a really good test of it, you could also use the middleman test, but a really good test of it is if you had to be at a non-life-threatening, but specialist doctor's appointment, could you skip this meeting? And if the answer is yes, then guess what? Vacation's probably at that level as well in most cases, if you have a family and you need to be off sometimes. It's not going to go perfectly.
No.
Nothing ever does.
Nothing ever does. Even when you're there, it doesn't go perfectly.
Right. Speed and vacations and cardiologist appointments are important. If your direct, your number two, makes a mistake, give them feedback. And when it goes well, give them positive feedback too. When you take a meeting for me when I'm on vacation, my family thanks you. Oh my gosh, so impactful. We can think of no higher praise, frankly.
Yeah, than doing your job on your behalf so you can go on an uninterrupted vacation. That's really good.
It's great.
Something we all wish we had.
Yeah.
So to sum it up, folks, number twos exist for powerful reasons. To get to the next level, you need help. You just do. Everyone in the organization above you knows that it's true. And in order to accomplish that, your directs need more trust and they need more practice at the work you do. So choose one and start implementing this standard process. Develop your number two and have more and better time to get done the things that only you can do.
Thanks, Sarah.
All right. Thanks, Kate. And that's all for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Join us again next week as we begin a new topic.
Bye, everyone.